Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, Cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout. This week, I'm joined by...
Hi, I'm Michelle Peralta. I use female pronouns. I am a first-generation Salvadorian, born and raised in San Francisco, yogi, long time into philosophy and anything psychology related, big theater and finance nerd, and a first-time startup founder.
I'm also joined by...
Hey, folks, I'm Bruce, also known as BJ. He, him, his... A black tech professional, video game enthusiast, entrepreneur, virtual reality evangelist, and a bit obsessive about comic book and sci-fi media. Also, love animation, both foreign and domestic. Had this unique opportunity to travel the world for work and also for pleasure, and I'm thrilled to be able to share my passions with you, the Minority Corner audience.
Okay, this week we have a double whammy for y'all. We have double the guest co-hosts. We are continuing our conversations that we've had with Cymatic Bruce, BJ, and Michelle Peralta. Michelle and I continue our conversation about the census and what does it mean to leave Latinx folks off when we have things like this. I saw Hustlers, and my thoughts and reaction might surprise you. Are you bored during your quarantine? Well, now is the time to dive into some video games, some that you've been maybe putting off. Well, BJ is here to talk to us about some notable video games, specifically ones that are featuring POC leads. Half-Life Alyx has definitely gotten his attention. And we dive into a deep conversation about the racial demographics of game players, the video game industry for people of color, how the video game industry and for the characters are changing in terms of their demographics. And we go from the Atari to the virtual reality sphere. We're talking all kinds of games and essentially why diversity is important, not only on the screen, but also behind the scenes, so you can avoid some mistakes that some video games have been making even recently. Also, we talk about virtual reality horror and why it seems so real and essentially why I am never doing it again. And we're continuing our Madam C.J. Walker impressions. It's kind of like she's here. Well, it's more so like our impressions of Octavia Spencer doing Madam C.J. Walker. Great Netflix series. Be sure to check that one out. You know, with so much going on, it is so important for us to be able to have grounded practices in mindfulness. And luckily, Michelle is here, who she's been doing mindfulness before it was cool. Essentially before it got super cliche. So go with us here. So Michelle is going to give us a lot of wonderful tips about how she's approached mindfulness, practicing mindfulness, her journey to becoming a yoga teacher, and also the journey of going through the yoga world as a Latina. She also talks about the journey of herself being Catholic and going into the world of yoga and doing those practices. You know, our conversation really did ground for myself the importance of doing something like meditation or yoga or some sort of mindfulness practice, staying healthy during this pandemic. Also, we talk about starting a bank. Yes, Miss Michelle Peralta, the badass herself, is starting a bank. We talk about work-life balance. I just found this talk really, really helpful, again, especially given everything that is going on. So I'm sure you too are going to find some wonderful, useful tools in this conversation. So let's jump into it. We're going to get nerdy, we're going to get mindful, and we're going to learn, laugh, and play right here on Minority Corner. We're talking about the census, and yes. We're talking about like there not being a space for like Latino and growing up.
Yeah,
like,
how I remember that. Yeah. I remember that for standardized tests. I notice it less now, but as a kid, every once in a while, there'd be something where you needed to check the box. And there wasn't a Latino, Hispanic, other. And I understand there's different views and politics around what that title should be or could be or what it's inclusive of.
Yeah.
And I want to be respectful of that, but it's not the same as white. That's yeah. It's definitely not the same.
That shouldn't be the default of like, well, we couldn't figure out what it's going to be, so we'll just do white.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah.
And then the fact that there are no instructions as to what to choose, whether it's other, whether it's white or what. And so that inconsistency there, that to me feels like allowing for intentional ambiguity.
And how fucked up, if I'm a kid, I don't know what bubble is mine. It will really fuck up my identity and my place. I think it was also kind of...
It feels like it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's a very clear message. This doesn't matter. Also, oh, by the way, you're maybe, I'm thinking about the numbers, more people seem to tend to choose white than
mm-hmm,
other.
Mm-hmm.
And so and not only is it saying that distinction doesn't matter, but, oh, by the way, we're going to take resources into the white bucket.
Oh, yeah.
That would have otherwise been allocated there.
Yep. Yeah. And it also, I think, gives a false perception too. I think it shrinks the minority population as well.
It does.
Because as we say, a minority corner together with a majority, because mm-hmm. that's the truth of it. Which I learned from, Dolores Huerta.
Yes.
The reason why we close with that is she was like, you guys shouldn't be called minority corner, you should be called majority corner, because we actually are. Like, white people only make up, like, 25% of the population.
Yep.
Right. And so you're taking the numbers away, and also, too, you're telling someone, like, oh yeah, you're white, but you're not really. It's like we're gonna take all of your resources and your identity, and then when you're like applying for a job, or we see who you are, or the police, they're gonna treat you, you know, differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go back to like, you know, that stop and frisk policy, like, mm-hmm. oh, we're gonna stop and frisk you, Latina people, Latina folks, but we ain't got a bubble for you on the SAT. What's that about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to circle back because you were saying some great stuff and I was like, hold on, I'm not Linda tripping you yet. Record. I watch Hustlers. You're like, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Continue. Do you know Jennifer Lopez?
Yes.
Well, like, I don't know if you know her.
that makes me, you know, my brain immediately goes to Mariah.
Yeah. Oh my God. If you were Mariah Carey and I asked you if you knew Jennifer Lopez, you'd be like, I don't know her. You're not Mariah, so of course you know her, because she's the only person on the planet who doesn't know her. So I watched, so a friend of mine who's like a film director, movie aficionado, I'd heard a lot of hoopla about Jennifer Lopez and Hustlers, and that she was snubbed out of the Oscars and da-da-da.
Oh, right.
And mm-hmm. I was thinking, it was like, okay, guys, come on, calm down. Like, I saw Jennifer Lopez act opposite Viola Davis in a Lifetime original movie, and... I was looking at her for the wrong reasons, because Viola Davis was doing such a great job, mm-hmm. and that Jennifer Lopez couldn't keep up. Like, she was okay. Michelle.
I mean, they're pretty different classes of actresses.
Michelle Williamsing. She was asthmatic, could not keep up. Like,
yeah.
Can you keep up, baby girl? Her breath was lost, and she couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
I watched Hustlers, and I was blown away.
Wow.
You are not prepared for how good it is.
Wow. Like, that's saying something.
In fact, we keep talking about how much I can't wait to watch it again. What adult is ever looking forward to watching a movie again? We don't do that. Like, that's kids are like, let's watch it again right now.
Yeah.
Adults, like, we oftentimes, like, we'll watch something once and that's it. I can't wait to, it's such a, there's so many, like, classic moments that happen in it that are so fucking hilarious. Oh. It's directed by a woman.
That is pretty cool.
Makes the world a difference, because if a man had directed this movie, it would have been fucking, I think, terrible. Or just been like, titties galore. And like, it's also based on a true story. And I remember hearing the story about these women who used to work in the strip club and like what they did. You got to watch the movie. I remember hearing about it. And it's just like the movie, like it's some, like the bonds in the movie were so strong. Like, it's just like, again, the power of having someone who's a part of that community or that like to sort of like bread, like knead out the nuances of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been practicing that metaphor.
it's so a good one.
I want to give a lot of recommendations. And as a dancer, because Michelle's a dancer, even though sometimes she gets stuck on the floor when I I used to teach Michelle.
Hey, and she didn't say a great dancer, just a dancer.
No, she great, y'all. She good. And sometimes, but sometimes she, when the choreography's on the ground and then you got to get up, sometimes ooh, Michelle needs some help. But you will appreciate the athleticism of what Jennifer Lopez does in it.
Oh, I love her dancing.
And she also showed that you don't have to take your clothes off to make a good movie. Ooh. It's a movie about strippers and you're like, well, we got to see her titties. You don't need to. And I really give the snaps to that because wow, like when Demi Moore tried to do a movie about strippers, they're like, we gotta see your titties. And she's like, fine, different times.
different times.
And
sure,
there were still titties in the movie. There's even peen, which I
oh,
yeah, there's peen in the movie. Spoiler alert, you're gonna okay, see peen. Yeah, so I like the female relationships were just so I loved it so much. The female relationships were so strong. I've never seen a movie. And there's choices that this director, she makes in it that me and my friend Ian, and he's a film aficionado, mm-hmm, had just never seen before.
Wow.
It's just so creative. It's funny. I literally felt like I had really good sex and smoked a cigarette afterwards because it made you feel like your body, like you weren't breathing through your asshole. Because you're wow, feeling so many feelings all at once. You're laughing. Mm. You're rooting for these women. It also talks about like the fucked upness of like it takes place right after the recession or during the time of the recession.
And very relatable.
Very relatable. Fucked upness about capitalism. These are all also women of color. It's just like such a fucking brilliant movie. And Jennifer Lopez does a fucking amazing job, which I never thought I would say.
Yeah, she's kind of usually the same person in every movie.
This movie, this director really got Jennifer Lopez just like be a human being. And wow, I see that as an actor. It's one of the hardest things in the world to do. Lizzo pops up, does an amazing job. You know, a lot of times they shoot over in these little like singer, songer, rappers in it. Cardi B's in it. Mm. Phenomenal job.
Oh, I love her.
And you would have thought like, I mean, a lot of times they're just like, I mean, case in point, Ashanti in Resident Evil 3. It's awkward and clunky.
Like, what about it? So
shoehorn this R&B prince. Not princess, because she was never my princess. They tried to make like Ashanti's the R&B princess. Like, not my princess. Because it was too close after Aaliyah died. They were trying to give us a new princess. I'm like, no. Mm,
yeah.
Oh, baby. No, baby. Go, baby. Anyways, I wanted to do a plug about Hustlers. I told you in the elevator, it was good.
I'm into it.
Anything else.
I'm excited.
I don't
want to
hype it up too much, but it is.
That was pretty hyped up.
Okay. Well, I don't. Well, now
I'm already
hyped
up.
Lower your expectations just a little bit, like, but definitely go rent it and watch it. Like, everyone does an amazing job. So.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Dave Hill from Before. And I'm very excited to bring Dave Hill's podcasting incident back to Maximum Fun, where it belongs. You can get brand new episodes every Friday on MaximumFun.org or, you know, wherever. And while my partner Chris Gersbeck and I might lack in specific subject matter on our podcast, we make up for in special effects. Chris, add something cool right here. Also, we have explosions, animal noises, and sometimes even this. Dave Hill's podcasting incident. Every Friday on Maximum Fun. Chris, do another explosion right here.
BJ's Corner, BJ's Corner.
Oh yeah, I'm ready to corner it up. Woo!
So let's say I am at home, I'm sad, and I'm bored. What can I do?
Well, you could be doing what a lot of people are doing right now, which is to catch up on all those video games that you haven't had time to play or your video game of choice. There actually have been some really high-profile releases just in time for the coronavirus pandemic.
Perfect time, because isn't right now there's supposed to be like a lot of gaming conventions and like it's a big time for games right now, and so they're having all these games to be like, ooh, showcase, and instead it's like, okay, stay home and play.
Correct. It should have been the Game Developers Conference. What would have been happening this past week, E3 is canceled. That would have been happening in June.
I thought that was my guess. I was going to say E3.
Yeah, and a variety of gaming conferences, events, technological events. They are no more, but the software is out there and their games are being released. Animal Crossing, Doom, Half-Life, Alyx. There's a lot of great stuff. And so in the spirit and enthusiasm of gaming, and in partnership with Minority Corner. Oh. Hey, I want to talk about...
the first time anybody said partnership with Minority Corner, and I liked it. Can you say it again?
Oh, in partnership with Minority Corner.
Now, can you say it as Madam C.J. Walker?
Oh! Look at Minority Corner! Look at it! It's wise! It's beautiful. Is partnered.
Oh, God, I love Madam.
Right. Madam CJ doing it.
She loves video games.
She loves it. But it's wonderful. I thought I'd have a little conversation about people of color and video game media and the game industry in general, because it's a very interesting topic, as it turns out, because a lot of people of color, blacks and of Latin descent especially, like, we're a big chunk of the video game audience. We're a big, big chunk of video game players. I think to bring up some stats quickly.
I think that makes sense because we're also a big part of the world.
Yes.
So I'm not surprised.
Not surprised at all. But it's, you know, it's really... something else that if you're talking about African American and Hispanic youth in this country, a Pew study showed that 89% of black teens play video games.
Wow.
And 69% of Hispanic teens play video games.
Wow.
And it's just like, that is something else. And so we have...
makes sense, because then my family, which is your family,
yeah,
everybody played a video game.
Everywhere. I mean, hey, even in the projects, people talk about Madden and Street Fighter, right?
Yeah, that's like, true.
I mean, video games have been such an interesting part of minority culture because, you know, partially it's an escape, partially it's a way to kind of work through your issues. It's, you know, when other things in life aren't working out, at least you have some problem solving and achievable goals that a video game might offer.
Yeah.
Or it could be like, you know, if some kids get lost in the stories and the fans, just like you would get, you know, lost in a good book.
Yeah.
Or in a good movie, right?
Yeah.
And it has that interactive thing. So there is just a significant chunk of our, you know, populace as minorities that really enjoy video games, are big fans of them, or play them, but that is not necessarily reflected in the people that are creating and making the games, right?
Well, there's also, too, I feel like a sense of, like, status, economic status, too, like getting a video game system. Like, you feel like as a kid, you're like, oh, we've made it.
Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis.
Being able to keep up with, like, the latest systems, latest video games, like, you were part of the conversation.
Yeah, when I was dead broke, I couldn't picture this, says Biggie.
yes.
But it's like, yeah, it definitely is a status symbol, right? Like, you are the kid that has the video game system in the neighborhood. And it was just interesting as I thought, like, hey, you know, when some kids in some neighborhoods, you know, every other house had a personal computer in it, like, you know, in our neighborhood, it was like, hey, we had a bunch of Nintendos and Sega systems.
Yeah.
Right? And that, for a lot of those kids, is their window into, you know, technology, too, for certain age ranges. So it's just this interesting story about, you know, there's just this ongoing kind of work that's happening to get more people of color, not only, like, in the game industry, designing games, getting that education so they can be in a position to be creators.
Right.
But also just in general, the type of stories and characters you know, the cultures and settings that are shown and represented in video games, right? We see a lot of, like, the urban stuff, the city stuff, the high fantasy European-based type of video games, but you know, with the kind of resurgence of indie gaming that happened about probably, you know, a decade or so ago, you're starting to see a lot more games that are representative of diverse viewpoints from, you know, Black, Latin descent, Hispanic, you know, LGBT, like just people just making interactive experiences that are reflective of their life experiences.
Wow.
That's been really interesting.
I feel like I stopped playing video games at the wrong time.
Yeah.
I just play other people's video game systems or convince them to buy video games that I want to play.
Yes, you do. Marvel Alliance 3.
I've gotten 3 people to purchase that game.
Oh my gosh.
In my defense, I have also bought controllers for friends of mine. Here's my thing. I don't want a system in my house because I will play it all the time. So what I do is I have friends or family members who have them. I'll even like contribute. I'll buy a controller. I'll leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll buy a game and be like, all right, let's play this.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't want it in my house.
I can understand that.
Because I'm learned and I'm beautiful.
And you're wise. And I'm wise. I understand that. But yes, it's just really amazing and interesting, some of the developments that have happened. And I mean, I think representation has always been a controversy in gaming, like going back, I mean, to the Atari 2600 days, mm-hmm. like one of the first video game systems. There was an adult-oriented game called Custer's Revenge, which is just crazy, but it's like you're trying to have sex with a Native American woman, apparently. I mean,
on the Atari.
On the Atari. Wow. Like, I mean, and going back then, I mean, and you can go like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, which is a really popular game, really fun, right?
Yeah.
But at a certain point when Mike Tyson was having his issues and Nintendo didn't want to be associated with him anymore, suddenly it became Mr. Dream's Punch-Out, and it was this big, beefy, white dude with a big chin. And it was like he was totally just removed, and it was like, well, I can definitely understand, like, you know, Nintendo's move. Why not, like, you know, another boxer?
Yeah, or just make up a boxer.
make up a boxer that's, but they made up Mr. Dream, who is the polar opposite of Mike Tyson.
They could have done, like, Tyke Myson.
No, nothing like that. Impossible. But it's interesting. Like, you know, we have just, like, controversies throughout the history of the video game industry when it comes to race and identity. Just a few off the top, like there was the Mafia game. So in particular, Mafia 3, the lead is a black guy, but I believe this is the 1950s and 60s.
Wow, that's interesting.
So it's very interesting. And there's a disclaimer that comes up before you play the game to be like, hey, we wanted to not, essentially it says, hey, we want to not whitewash or misrepresent the time, so there will be offensive language in here.
Yeah.
So you have a black guy that's working with the mafia with Italian guys, and the N-word is used, and all sorts of racial slurs are used in the game, but they're like, hey, we could have made the decision as game creators to censor this, but we felt it would not be representative of the time, and it's part of that character's development, right?
See, I really like that. I feel like, because I do get, like, cringeworthy, like, when Quentin Tarantino is doing something and it's set in a time period and they're using the N-word all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone does something like that, it makes me realize they're aware of what's happening and they're wanting to. It's similar to, like, recently, I think Warner Brothers and their streaming services, they put up a disclaimer that they have, like, some of our cartoons, they're like, well, we realize that this language was never appropriate, is not appropriate now. This was the language that they were using, and we're like, you know, and not, we want to share this, but we also are acknowledging that this is wrong and but of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're putting up this disclaimer because it's like, yeah, you don't necessarily have to shelve something if you're at least warning people to look at this through a lens and calling out what's happening. I really appreciate that. Because
absolutely.
I will be the first person, because you know everybody's looking for something to get mad about.
Yeah.
I will get mad at that. Why he saying those words? Why he saying that? Why? And all I need is a little disclaimer to let me know that you know that it's wrong and what's going on.
Yeah. And I mean, so you have that end of the spectrum, which I totally agree. I think that if you're making a piece of art that's based on real events or representative of a piece of history, then I think it's really good to be honest about that representation of history, but also to, you know, include some information that is educating the user about that, you know, that content. Right,
because now I know, like, oh, okay, I don't need to go out into the real world and saying all these sort of things, you know, and looking at this, it's like going to a museum or something.
Exactly, exactly. And then there was other things like in Grand Theft Auto Vice City, there was like a gang war between Haitians and Cubans that was happening in that game, which was some controversy. In Resident Evil 5, I kind of felt like this was a very interesting situation. So in the Resident Evil games, you know, you have zombies and you're playing some kind of hero that's fighting them. But in this particular case, the protagonist is going to countries in Africa and all the people you shoot are basically Africans.
Ah!
And it's like, okay, well, in the context of this game, all these people are zombies. So, all right. But then it's also, man, like, how... How does this feel, right? Like, you're a white protagonist shooting down black people.
Was there a disclaimer?
I don't remember.
No, I doubt there probably.
I don't think there was.
I don't even know what the disclaimer would be. Like, no, we realized that. That would need a disclaimer. They would need to be out, like, no, they should have not made the game that way. Yeah. I can't even give you a disclaimer, Resident Evil.
And it's also...
Does he go to anywhere else, or the game is just set in Africa?
I believe it's mostly in Africa.
Oh, no. At least if he's, like, traveling around. But even that, like, because then he'd be, like, you know where he'd go next. He'd go to Asia. He would just go to all these, like, places with these, like...
No.
Yep.
That's how it was. Yeah, because the whole thing is just set in Africa. So he's, you know, you're killing African antagonists. And it's like,
that doesn't even feel right. And this is why you need, this is why diversity is important. Because if there was a black person working on that video game, they would have been like, excuse me, we can't do this and here's why, you know?
And, well, that is also an issue that complicates it because Resident Evil is made by Capcom, a Japanese company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, all right, so you have a game that's made by a primarily Japanese company with Japanese staff. Like, how are those sensitivities carried over from the West? Because, like, in places in Asia and Japan, what they know about black people is pretty much what's shown through the mainstream media.
Which then also goes to, again, like, why it's so important to be able to change what it is that they're seeing, because I mean Hollywood's the most important powerful place on this planet, because again what people see from Hollywood is now dictating what these folks see, what these, you know, Asian folks are seeing and then producing in their work, right? And so that's why when Hollywood for, you know, decades said that, you know, a movie with an all-black cast won't sell, and we knew that wasn't true. And finally, when you've got movies like not only Black Panther, but Girls Trip or, you know, Get Out, like they're doing extremely well. And then they can see, oh, okay, black people, you know. And at the same time, they vote with your dollars. Like, nobody buy this game. Like, don't buy it. Like, hurt them in their pocketbook and then let them know, like, oh, okay, we get it.
You can understand, right? I mean, some of those lessons, they just have to be learned the hard way. So it was just some interesting... Like, and it's just been interesting how this industry and the art that's being produced has constantly been representative of the conflicts that we have in our society as far as how people are represented. But it's been interesting that we've also throughout the years had these wonderful kind of positive representations of different, you know, minorities in video games when they're the lead character, where it's actually a whole character and not just... A character would throw off lines and
just on
and
the
stereotypical
side.
One-liners.
Just like, ooh, girl, don't go in there.
Yeah, ooh, thank you, LaQuisha, the non-playable
Thanks,
character.
Boo Boo Jones.
Boo Boo Jones is there to help Superfly Johnson. Excellent. But yeah, I mean, there's been you know, quite a few games I've done very well. One of the latest, which is currently occupying a lot of my time, is Half-Life Alyx. So the Half-Life series is pretty much has been a in the PC gaming space, has been a groundbreaking series of games. The first Half-Life, I believe, was 98-99. That was one of the first times you had like a shooter that was telling a story well and had like some real interesting AI going on with the way that the soldiers attacked you.
Was that the one with was Jennifer Connelly doing the voice in that?
No, I don't think so. What are you thinking of?
I swear to God, there's a game.
Jennifer Connelly.
And Jennifer Connelly does like a voice, and it was a big deal because it was a huge deal because a big actor was voicing a character in a game.
I don't remember what this game was. We're going to have to look this up. Yep, we'll figure it out. We'll look it up.
But, you're pretty sure you showed me the game and you were like, look, it's Jennifer Connelly.
I might have.
That's what I recall.
It's crazy. So many celebrities are in video games nowadays now.
They're taking our jobs. Look at them. The talented.
The talented.
The beautiful.
The wise.
The wise. Stand up.
And Half-Life 2 came out in 07. That was another genre-defining PC game, where not only the narrative, but also the use of physics. It breaks kind of the norm because the main character, instead of just doing some kind of military dude, was an astrophysicist, which was really cool.
Okay.
So you get to be a science nerd that's actually doing all the fighting and falutin'.
Love the science.
Love the science. So what was interesting in also Half-Life 2 is that one of the characters that you engage with most... is a fellow physicist that you work with in Half-Life 1 called Dr. Eli Vance, who's a black man who's you see throughout the game doing things. And his daughter is Alex. And she's half black, half white, I believe. And
biracial video game protagonist.
Biracial. So she is just...
And a woman.
And a woman. So it's wonderful that she's like this companion during Half-Life 2 and the Half-Life 2... Like, there was a Half-Life 2, the main game, and Episode 1, Episode 2. And you go through with her through this story, and she's, like, you're just, like, your support, your right-hand woman. She's just doing things, and but she's very much an equal. Like, she's leading you through things, and it's really interesting. And so the latest in the Half-Life series, which just came out, is a VR-only title, virtual reality title.
Uh-oh, that sounds like it's in your wheelhouse.
Oh, you know it is.
Listen,
oh, I love it.
I gotta tell you, because I'm quarantined with this guy, and he wakes up, and he's just like, I'm like, good morning, and it's like, good morning, I don't even, just like, you know, like in the cartoons, the Looney Tunes, you see like some dust, vroom, and he's just like, Half-Life 2 VR, da da da. That's all I saw. And then he
That's
went
it.
Then he went to the studio.
Now he's gone. In VR.
He was in the VR world.
Oh yes.
And it was beautiful.
It was learning. but no, it's just this very just fantastic, wonderful experience where this time you are playing as Alex. And you are, so you are her, and you're kind of, it's a prequel to Half-Life 2, and you're, you know, going through, and it's kind of more on the horror side, but you're getting through, and yeah, it's kind of,
see,
it's got some scary stuff going on.
Okay, now, Also, what happened is, when the man disappeared for 5 hours, I went, and I was like, where is this man? And I look, and I see him in the garage, and he's like, you want to put this VR on? I'm like, oh, no, because y'all know I've had some really bad experiences with VR, some traumatizing, terrifying experiences.
Oh, no!
And, yeah, and then you're like, no, it's fine. Little did I know, it's a terrifying horror movie-like experience. You want me to put those goggles on?
At the time in the game that I was going to show you, there was no horror going on.
All I want to see, when I do VR, all I want is, like, flying in clouds... And like puppies, but like cartoon puppies. Because if it's like real puppies, they could be snarling at me. I don't need that. I had a traumatizing puppies. Experience, and it was bad.
I'm sorry.
And you try to traumatize me some more.
I'm sorry.
Let the record state.
Let the record show that was not mine.
Why are we both Octavia Spencer doing Madam C.J. Walker?
Not my intention. Stand with me.
I almost got scared.
Oh, my goodness. No, I do not do well with virtual reality horror at all. Like, because a lot of that stuff, it's cheap scares. And it's not great or well done. And it's like early in my VR journey, you know, I would live stream this stuff and play the horror titles. And eventually I stopped because there was a certain point where I was just getting real world, real life anxiety from the horror experience. Like, yeah. I'd have my restless leg type thing. Like, it was happening, like, involuntarily.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you go through experiences like that, and it's like virtual reality, if you haven't tried it, it's something that you have to experience to understand. But it's just such a different type of experience because you put those goggles on, and our brains are so wired to react and process the visual feedback. Like, if you are a person that has regular eyesight, that's the sense you rely most on. Yeah. That's your world.
Yeah.
And so what a virtual reality, you know, headset is essentially doing is replacing the world you see with that world that's, you know, simulated. And to a certain extent, the sound is doing, like, you know, that varies from experience to experience.
Sure. Once, if you put the goggles and the headphones on, like, I'm always like, I'm gone.
You're gone.
Whole new world.
You totally. Like, I've been doing this for years.
When I came in, I spooked you because your world, like, I was like, what's going on? I didn't say anything. Just, you know me, just being all cute and amazing. And you were like, gah! I don't know what was going on.
Yeah.
I'm just getting a bottle of water.
I've been doing virtual reality for years and years now, and still, once I've got, you know, a good sound system, good headset on, like, I totally lose track of the real world space.
Totally.
You know, and where I am, what direction I'm facing. It's really just, you know, something that's below the conscious level, like what we're doing with the technology now with virtual reality, because it's so fast, it's basically surpassing what your biology uses to keep track of, you know, of the world, right?
Well, I mean, I literally have seen, years ago, but we put an aunt of ours on a very cartoony roller coaster, and she was just sitting in her chair, screaming because her brain was thinking what she was seeing was real. And it feels like it. Like, I remember I was going up the roller coaster and I could feel the butterflies in my stomach going up. And then when that drop comes, you feel it because your brain is like, oh, I'm on a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's not voluntary. Like, you know, once you have the sound cues, you have the vision cues there, and your brain fills in the rest.
Yeah.
You know, you just think about when you're having a dream and you're falling and you feel your stomach lift, like, you know you're in bed and you're not falling, but because that dream is happening, it's kind of, you know, the lizard brain, unconscious type stuff. It's touching. And virtual reality technology is at a point now where that's where it's touching. So, you know, I mean, as designers, you got to be really careful if you're, you know, designing that stuff to be like, okay, well, what am I trying to accomplish here? And, you know, be mindful of what type of people are going to actually be in this experience. Yeah. But digressing from that, But the actual experience of Half-Life Alyx is amazing. There's just lots of just incredible design decisions that are being made there. So I think it's a record-breaking title as far as, you know, just the polish and complexity of the design and the depth and level of interaction that you have. So that's really exciting to be at this point in history to see that piece of software come out. Since we're stuck at home, it's kind of a great opportunity to dive into it.
That. Yeah. Hey, that reality is probably a lot better than this current one.
Yes, this is the dark timeline we're in right now. This is crazy. Okay. 2020 coming in, Kobe's dead, Australia's on fire.
Oh my God.
Coronavirus.
Okay, right. Well, thank you, BJ. just going off the rails here. What? Oh, okay.
Save us.
There's nothing quite like sailing in the calm international waters on my ship, the SS Biopic.
Avast! It's actually pronounced biopic.
No, you dingus! It's biopic!
Who the hell says that? It's biopic.
It's the words for biography and picture.
All right, that is enough. Ahoy, I'm Dave Holmes. I am the host of the rebooted podcast formerly known as International Waters, designed to resolve petty but persistent arguments like this. How? by pitting two teams of opinionated comedians against each other with trivia and improv games, of course. Winner takes home the right to be right.
What podcast be this?
It's called Trouble.
It was not allowed in this class. Oh, it was a group class.
Do you know why you need to put that? Ooh, right? Yeah. He coming in there
getting
taking his clothes
too
off.
Too comfortable.
So keep your clothes on. It's a tie class, y'all. Keep your shirts on.
Yes, yes. Highly recommend Thai massage. Yeah,
you know what it is? It's. I feel like before every Thai class, they should play, "We don't have to take our clothes off to have a good time." Uh-huh. Do you remember that song?
No.
Do you not remember that song? It's just me. Oh my God. I'm going to play it for you later.
Please. Oh my goodness.
No, I'm going to play it for you right now.
Oh my goodness.
He kind of sounds like Michael Jackson.
It's a very popular sound.
At that time.
Oh my God.
For good time. Oh yeah. We don't have to take our clothes off.
This is the most PG-13 song I've ever heard.
Yeah, that was like a great pop hit. We don't have to take our clothes off to have a good time. You don't know about that? Oh,
no.
You know what? Every time you have a date.
No, I grew up with like Genuine Pony.
Oh, it was like Get Nasty. Peaches and cream. Yes. You know what I mean. You
and like I Jordan Knight, Give God. It to You, which now like kind of has like not a very consensual vibe to it.
No, he was not being consensual. And it's weird because it had like the beat of like Jordan Knight's I'm Gonna Give It to You. I don't even like saying it.
I slow down as I'm like saying the title out loud.
But
it's very like poppy sing songy.
It was like when you look at the lyrics. I remember when Disney Channel started playing music videos, they had to beep out all of the words.
Yeah, there are no like, words you could say on the Disney Channel.
Bringing you back to my beep, rubbing my beep on your beep.
Oh, God.
I just want to beep, beep, beep. That was the song.
I'm like physically cringing right now. I'm like,
and then he's like dancing around at a carnival. He's gonna give it to you. Where? Oh. Okay. Anyway.
And it's like bulky sweater.
Well, I want you before like, you know, you have a date
cargo
going,
pants. You're like, ooh, what you got in those pockets?
I'm gonna give it to you. Please don't. I want from now on, like your first date or like, well, I don't know your schedule, but second date or first date or third date or whenever they come over to Michelle's boudoir.
Oh my goodness.
And you then like, I'm just going to put some music on. Ooh. And then you play, we don't have to take our clothes off to have a good time. Like, and I see you like dancing around. And then you guys can fill out the census. But separately, I just plug
that's
in.
That's an excellent.
But separately, because you're, as far as I know, not in the same household. And Michelle, if it's your first, second, or third date, you shouldn't be. This is like an intervention for you.
Like, what is
girl,
happening?
Girl, don't fill out the census together. It's only your third date. We're not living with each other.
Too soon.
That'd be a really interesting thing. Could you imagine you're on a date and you're just like, this is going really well. And they like pull out their like census like form.
Lord.
They're like, should we?
That'd be really good marketing material for the census.
Moving too fast.
It's time to have the important conversation.
That is good.
And they're like, God. Condom, census. Like, just making good choices. Yeah. Make good choices.
There was a joke for the longest time of, like, what does a lesbian bring on a first date? A U-Haul.
Oh!
And what I love is the lesbians took that, and used to be a dance party in San Francisco called U-Haul, and it was lesbian night.
Oh, fun!
Yeah. It's not happening now because everything's closed.
Aww,
but
yeah.
Also because lesbian bars have been closing down because gays and especially lesbians have been pushed out of cities.
Oh, and wait, in general, here?
I did a report.
Oh,
lesbian
Why
bars have
that?
Been closing down. Well, listen to the episode and I walk you through it. But some highlights that I can remember is for one, like in a lot of these cities like San Francisco, they get more expensive to live. Mm. And for one, women get paid less, so that even affects like the for even lesbians, you know, economy, right?
Right.
And also too, like in general, like they like the bar scene wasn't as much for the lesbians or something. I forget what I like read, but they would like hang out and do like more group togethers and potlucks. I don't know. I think that's just my, that was my gay college professor who said that, right? That's clearly some just gay man who said that, who was like, oh yeah, they're just having potlucks. Sorry, ladies. Anyways. Noted.
They're all here in Oakland.
Well, they're even getting pushed out of here.
Oh no, really?
Yeah. But anyways, I digress. Mm. Michelle's Mindfulness Corner. Mm. Segway.
A couple themes today around attachment in our relationships and around nonviolent communication.
Yeah. And you were talking earlier about mindfulness in the POC culture.
Yes.
And the consequences of not having mindfulness in your life. And how for POC folks, how we're having to like sort of navigate that. And you had been talking earlier too about how you've been moving into this amazing, wonderful, badass bitch job. Move over Hillary Clinton, toot toot, beep beep. Here comes Michelle. But how mindfulness has not been in your life as much. And you're going to give us some tips about keeping mindfulness in.
Yes. All right. Thank you for that. So
like, what am I talking about? All I know is
there's so many things.
I know my clothes shouldn't be coming off because we're having a good time.
People get very excited about mindfulness. Exactly. I know. Yeah. I know. I like to think I was been in, involving mindfulness in my life before it was cool. Like before it was called that.
It's like now people kind of roll their eyes. They're like, I practice mindfulness. And they're like, ugh.
It's so gross. Yeah, it's so gross. And it's so like, it can be so surface level and fake and just a buzzword.
Yeah.
There are things that I didn't realize were considered mindfulness. I look back on that. I just grew up with as things that my mom raised us with, like pain management. Like when you were a kid, if you like fell and I don't know, scraped your knee or something.
Yeah.
And we're like crying and my mom's trying to get us to calm down. Instead of saying like calm down or just like stop, it would be to focus on our breath.
Ooh.
To like notice breathing. And sometimes it's like, it's pretty quick and it's short when you're like kind of panicky or scared. Sometimes often for a kid, like, yeah, there is the pain of it, but there's like the fear of like, just kind of the shock of what just happened.
Yeah.
And she would say, how big does it hurt? Is it a watermelon? Is it a dinosaur? Yeah. Is it like, what is it? And then, you know, you'd pick, yeah, it's like a watermelon. It hurts so bad. Like, okay. Picture the watermelon. What does the color look like? What does the texture feel like? Okay. It's this big watermelon. It hurts so bad. Okay. Now what does it feel like? Is it a little bit smaller? Like what's the next shape down? Maybe it's like a cantaloupe. And then maybe it's an orange. Yeah. And then maybe we're getting down to a strawberry. And in that conversation, you're helping kind of shift this focus. And you're not taking the pain away.
Right.
But you're helping this kid or adult or ourselves. I need to know.
Sometimes I got an owie. Like, what? How big is it? Am I a watermelon or is it a little gumball?
Yeah. And I like that example because it's not... it's not removing any of the importance of the experience.
It's not devaluing your experience.
Exactly.
And allowing you to also get really present because sometimes we can, when we really stop and we're like, oh, okay, it's actually not that, it hurts, but it's not that big.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
And that's mindfulness.
That's mindfulness.
Go mom.
Yeah. Okay. And that was just, you know, and so when, I've got like, tons more examples like that. And so when I heard about this mindfulness movement, I was like, why is this seemingly so new? Why is this so radical? Like, come on.
Yeah.
And it was also around a time where I decided to start studying to become a yoga teacher.
Okay.
And my dad had recently been diagnosed with cancer.
Mm.
And I was looking for something. I was very focused on caring for him and helping him get through the chemo treatments, which are... if you've ever been through them yourself or helped guide someone through them, like they're just awful all around. Like there's the disease itself that's awful. And then like the treatments are just these terrible toxins in our body. It's not fun. And I knew that I needed a way to build myself up more so that I could really be there for my dad.
Yeah.
And I was looking for something I was traveling a lot for my job and I realize now in retrospect, like I had a lot of self-worth attached to travel.
Really?
That like when I needed to be on a plane yeah. for something work related, that I felt really busy and important.
Yeah, it's like I'm sorry, I'm going. I'm a work trip. Excuse
I got a work
me.
Trip. I gotta go.
Excuse me, I've gotta go. They're like, ma'am, everyone's in line at the airport. They're like, but I'm on a work trip.
Yeah,
ma'am, please get in line.
Yeah, it like gets to your head. And
same, I've been there. Totally. I feel
totally.
That. I feel like traveling for work is so different than like just traveling to go see Nana.
It's so different. And I mean, I wasn't flying anything fancy.
Sure, yeah.
But it was just like the reason behind it and the pace of it. And now because my dad was sick, like no one was telling me that I couldn't travel, but I didn't want to be too far away or far away for too long from my dad. So I was choosing not to.
Yeah.
And so I was looking through bucket list items and I found yoga teacher training as something that, cause I was trying to think, okay, I grew up in San Francisco, I'm native San Franciscan. What are things that people come here for? Like, this is a destination for lots of
right.
things.
Yeah.
Like, what can I choose that
like
makes
gold.
Me feel... Yeah, gold.
Used to.
Yes.
Prostitution, tech.
Yes, all of these things. We've had a rich, rich history.
Stand-up comedy.
He'll be here all night, folks. And yoga. Yeah.
And just trees.
And just trees. Pollen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Keep it out of your nose.
I'm not a scientist.
So it was a great, I didn't expect, I thought I was going to learn how to become an exercise teacher.
Oh, right.
In fairness.
Yeah.
Like I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I just needed like an outlet, something fun, something that was just for me. And I didn't expect to fall in love with the philosophy of it so much and notice how much of the, I appreciated there were certain like Buddhist teachings mm-hmm. that to me also resonated with a lot of things that I grew up. I grew up a Latina Catholic. My family's from El Salvador. The name of our country literally translates to the Savior, Jesus. Like, yeah. So you don't really like choose Catholicism.
Sure, sure.
You just sort of like are Catholic.
Yep. Yeah. You're just like, this is you.
Yeah. It's just very cultural. And so I don't.
Did you find it then hard to then transition into something of yoga, which I would imagine too in the Bay Area is probably like very a lot of white granola
mm-hmm.
people who probably don't have such strong or connections or probably weren't grew up in like have a strong religious background. There maybe are some, but it's probably yes. like a lot of more people who just sort of like were, you know, white and watched and were Full House or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there are
Stephanie Tanners.
Yeah.
They were Stephanie Tanners.
Yes. You know, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier around populations of people who have experienced struggle the way others maybe have not.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised to find, I was expecting to feel a little more on the outside of these teachings.
Sure.
And I was surprised to see that it seemed like more of these like life-altering epiphanies were happening for these like very stereotypical small-town white students.
Yeah, yeah.
And this idea that not everything is about you.
Yeah.
That like we can depersonalize this experience
yep.
and look at it in different ways. And I'm not saying that, you know, all of the non-white students
agree.
Grasp this perfectly,
yeah.
and I'm still grasping it myself, but I did notice that that was less of this like earth-shattering epiphany, maybe for the other students.
Yeah. What I think too, because I mean, I grew up in a Black Baptist church, and I think there's a sense of community that you're mm-hmm. instilled with, and it can't be all about you because it's actually all about the greater whole and the
yes.
community. And being from college, like if you know growing up Latinx and Catholic or Black and in the Baptist church, like you. Also, those are refuge points too, because the outside world barely mm-hmm. counting you in a fucking census, or they're putting you in some fucking chains. And so it's been a survival space to be able to be a part of something larger than yourself,
yes.
bigger than yourself, giving to something else bigger than that's not just about you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Something
and,
else. Oh,
so
sure.
now that they're having that, they're finding this in their yoga practice. They're like,
yes.
Oh.
It's a first time for that.
Huh. Okay, now that makes... Okay, yeah.
Yeah, all right. which I think is pretty cool. Like, I don't want to diminish that about their experience
totally,
either. I think
yeah.
that's really wonderful. I think we're all... we all have something different to learn and absorb from it. And we're all approaching concepts like these differently and differently every day.
Yeah.
What I take from something that I've read before or studied today is going to be different than when I looked at it a year ago or a year from now.
Picture you like reading something like 1 year, and then the next year, what's this?
I love to reread. I just reread The Pilgrimage, Paulo Coelho. So good. Ooh, and it was so different the second time.
Well, he did
Alchemist.
Yes, which I've read 2 or 3 times now. And every time you read it, Alchemist is a great book to read almost every year because you're going to get different things out of it.
Exactly.
And you're on your journey to find your own personal treasure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Those types of readings remind me a lot of the readings that I've fallen in love with on the yoga side. And I think a big distinction, something that's helped me kind of bridge like identity-wise where I sit with spirituality, religion, and the culture that I grew up with, in a way that approaching each of these things where I can feel like I can stay myself and not give something up, but rather like continue to grow and explore those things. I love Oprah's Super Soul Conversations.
Oh, you know,
you introduced those to me.
Oh, was it me?
Yes.
I live and breathe Oprah's Super Soul Conversations.
Oh my God. So. I cannot get enough of those. Yeah. And that was like all around the same time too. Yeah. And I was just like super steeped in those. And I just loved that. There's such a variety in the people that she interviews.
From all different kinds of, very spiritual people to atheists and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
I find that, again, because I love all religions and theories and things like that, I think they all get down to like a root of it's all about love and that we're all connected to something. We're all connected to something larger.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was in listening to lots of those side by side. It sort of reminds me of like, learning to wine taste when I was younger, where it's like, it's hard to tell when you're drinking one off here and there, but when you drink a few of them side by side and you like stack 6 of them together, then you can start to notice the nuances and start to learn for yourself what resonates with you.
Yeah.
In listening to all of these very different people explain to them what it meant to them, the difference between spirituality and religion.
Yeah.
I found I could better hone that distinction myself and my definition because I didn't realize that I'd been pushing away some of the spirituality stuff because I'd been conflating it with religious aspects that I found very claustrophobic and very just not coming from a loving, kind place.
Yeah, totally. The antithesis of what it seems like it should be practicing.
Yeah, yeah. That felt more like part of the political aspect that over the course of history, ideals that were used to control people rather than to like promote love. So to me, and I'll get into that explanation and bring it back to why this is important to yoga and the POC community. So what I feel like I've learned, and this is again, just I can only speak for myself. This is not the be all end all answer. But to me, religion is something that was created by humans. It's our interpretation of spirituality to the best of our ability for a given population at a given time in history.
Yeah.
And this maybe gets translated many, many times, maybe only a couple times, but it's the human response. It's a human attempt to put words to what spirituality is.
Right.
And sometimes we nail it and sometimes we don't. We're humans.
Totally. Yeah.
And like lots of things get lost in translation and that's just kind of like what it is.
And they're also affected by the environment. And
yes.
There's even certain things like in the Bible where it talks about like, you know, like thou shall not, you know, eat shrimp and things like that. Because like, I forget why, but there was a reason why, like, there was, like, economically of, like, why it was bad to eat shrimp at that time.
Yeah, or, like pork, and, like, at the time, it was unsafe to eat it.
Yeah, so
and
it was, like, don't eat it.
Right.
And so the problem is when we look at it through our current lens without understanding what was happening at that specific time.
Exactly. So that has helped me.
Oh, and don't lay with a man as you would another woman was for population reasons, because like, the population was dwindling.
Oh, my gosh.
They were, like, saying, hey, men, don't you be sleeping with each other. We know you like to do that, but you need to go fuck some women to go have some babies.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real translation of that verse.
Thank you for that.
I'll be preaching on the mound on at Sunday Funday on the hill. Bring some wine.
So that's this like pool of religion, and to me, spirituality is comes from this basis of love and kindness, yes. And this there are these things that are difficult to put words to,
right?
That are more ideals, yeah. Things that we can understand at our core, but have a harder time putting words to,
yeah.
But that are at the core of all of these religions. Yeah. Like if you distill them all down, right. They're all like the very like onion layers, and you peel them off. That at the core, like we're all trying to get to, like how can we be more loving to ourselves and others? Yeah. How do we develop more compassion for ourselves and others and kindness? How do we lead these lives that create a better community for ourselves and everyone? And so, anyway, to me, this distinction made it a lot easier for me to sort of decide what I wanted to incorporate in my life and become more involved in. And it helped me kind of better understand what kinds of yoga teachers that I felt like aligning myself with.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, because some will naturally fall a little closer on the religion end, and some are a little more on the spirituality end. Mm-hmm. For me, I appreciate the parts that are not related to religion. So, sure. Like, you don't need to be any religion. You don't need to renounce any religion. Come as you are. You are already perfect. Here are some ideals. Here are some things to think about. But that they're kind of more universal concepts that can be applied.
And like you can, like, I might be saying, you know, the universe or God or whatnot, but you can use whatever word. It's a placeholder.
Yeah.
You want to say the sun, like whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so to me, that helped my understanding, that helped me explain my understanding to my family. Like I was super surprised at how interested my dad was in what I was reading and what I was learning. And cause he was not the hippy dippy one. Like my mom, hippy dippy forever.
She's got it. She's like, okay, girl. Yeah. All right.
She's like, you finally like came to my world meditation. Let's do some upside
down dogs or whatever.
My dad was like super mathy sciencey. He was like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
But we had fun talking about it. And so now I find I get questions all the time, especially from my like Uber and Lyft drivers. if it comes up in conversation.
Right. Because your profile picture is like you doing a yoga pose.
Not of that one. No, it's more like
if
I have my like yoga mat and I'm like headed to the studio and I might be going as a student or I might be teaching or whatever.
Okay.
And it comes up in conversation.
Or you bring it up.
No.
So you just got done teaching a yoga class? I'm just kidding.
It's, I actually really enjoy it, particularly when it's I get interesting questions from male drivers, and they typically, if I really think about it, it's usually male, and it's usually a person of color, and I get the most interesting questions, and I love having a real conversation about it, because it's sort of this like safe space, and they end up with these questions. Yeah, yeah, I've been asked... is yoga for men too, or is it only for women?
Okay.
No, like a serious question.
It's a legit question.
Like serious question. Yeah. And I let them know, you know what? Yoga was originally designed only for men.
Yeah.
And women weren't allowed to learn any of these things.
Of course, like everything in the world.
Like
dresses were originally for men. Yeah. Like makeup for men.
Yeah.
Like almost everything used to be only. Even things
it
that
was super pink, restricted.
The color of pink was for men.
It was for men. It was for like men and like royalty status.
Yeah.
And so.
The color pink or yoga?
Oh, yoga.
Both.
Like
they were doing yoga in pink. Only the royals.
Yeah. yes. Something like that.
Fact check.
Yeah. And so like the reason these things were so secretive and so held for this highest caste was these were tools to basically... It was like a handbook on like how to be a human. How do you physically maintain your body in a healthy way, whether it's through exercise, through eating in a balanced way, approaching disease. It's how do you navigate as a human through your mind, because stress and anxiety and depression are just normal parts of the human experience.
Right. And these practices have been going on for thousands of years.
Yes.
So I practice transcendental meditation, which has been, and you learn it the exact same way they've been doing it for 2,500 years.
Wow.
Which to me, like, it's got the receipts. Like, if someone's been doing it that long, then, like, there's something that's really, you know, right about that. But again, like, people have always had a difficult time navigating the world and their existence and stress mm-hmm. and anxiety and depression and emotions and feelings. So it's like, it's great that there's always been these tools to help people sort of navigate those things.
Yeah.
And I would say, like, again, we were talking about this earlier with everything that's going on with this coronavirus. This is like, I'm making sure I'm meditating mm-hmm. now or never. Because, like, transcendental meditation works with, like, your nervous system. And so I need to make sure that yes. this is, it's, like, literally taking a shower twice a day of, like, my nervous system and making sure. And one of the instructors.
I love that analogy. It's like taking a shower. It's, like, it's just part of, it's like brushing your teeth.
Yes.
Like, it's just part of, like, doing the things that are good for you.
Yes, hands down. And are going to help, like, my yoga teacher, not my yoga teacher, my transcendental meditation teacher. He also eats incredibly clean, but he's, like, because we were talking about, like, long story long, he was like, I've not been sick in, like, 20 years. He just hasn't.
Wow.
He eats incredibly clean as well. So I think that has, like, diet has a huge thing of mm-hmm. it, too. But he also does his TM twice a day. And so it's, like, things, again, that we can be doing as opposed yes. to just, there's more that you can be doing than just stockpiling pasta and toilet paper and looking in your, you know, bunker.
Yes.
Other things you can be doing. You can take care of yourself. Just meditation.
Yes. If you're gonna, like, throw on a Netflix show, like, throw on a mindfulness video. Like, there's so much good stuff on YouTube. There's one woman in particular that I really like, Yogi Kala, K-A-L-A. She has a bunch of stuff. But there's one in particular. It's only 15 minutes. Okay. It's called Black Women Meditation: How to Reduce Stress with Meditation.
Wow.
You do not need to be a Black woman to watch this.
Okay, that was my Lyft driver follow-up question.
This is for everyone. That just happens to be her title.
Sure, yeah.
But
I think it's also important, too, because I think, yeah, like, I think especially, like, within the Black community, there's, you know, doing things like therapy or meditation and things like that, like, it's, mm-hmm. or yoga, there's a lot of stigmas around it because it's outside of the church.
Yes. Okay. Another Uber driver question I got, you know, the question was, do you ever get asked if yoga is evil? And he was like, I know that might sound weird. Like, yeah. The church that I grew up going to would preach that yoga was evil. And he's like, I understand. He's like, I've been living in San Francisco forever. Like, I understand that it's not, but I'm just curious, like, how that comes up because, you know, and I could empathize, like, when you've got, like, people that you trust and people who are, like, anchors yeah. in the community, you know and you're trusting they're speaking out of their heart and their best interests and, you know, just want to protect you. I wasn't there, so, like, I can't
right.
you know, say whether that was what was said or not, but I can grasp the concept. I think if I think of, like, having that conversation with my grandma, like, she might be a little squeamish about it. I think there have been plenty of cults and I mean, you can see, I mean, not even on that, but, like, there's tons of documentaries about, you know, leaders
in the yoga.
Yeah. Oh man. There's a lot of, I mean, the Bikram guy, there are a lot of yoga leaders who have
yeah.
taken it to really nasty, nasty places. Yeah. And unfortunately have given it a bad name, I think,
but that's not in any practice. Look at the WeWork guy. That
it's
happens
a power. It's
yeah,
a
that's
power,
power
play.
That can happen Ugh. To anything. Like,
yeah.
even Trumpism is a cult. Like, there's
yeah.
yeah. So that can happen anywhere.
Yeah, it's that. To me, it's a power play that you're right can happen anywhere. It's not reflective of, like, what is at the core of it.
Yeah.
I do think because there's no there. I was going to say the word regulation. I've been working in banking too long. I don't think yoga should be a regulated industry, but. But there are no, there is no regulation. So, like, there's no rule that says if you go to this one yoga center, it's going to be taught this way. And if
right.
you go to this one, I mean, there are definitely norms in yoga and there are definitely lineages. But it's so teacher dependent that to me, it's like, it's sort of like finding a therapist. Like, you might get really lucky and love yeah. the first one you find.
Right.
But I would recommend shop around. Yeah. Like, try a
same
bunch.
Thing, like, you would, and, like, same thing, I think, with
see what
therapy
you like.
And yoga. Like, some people go to one therapist, they're like, I hate it, I had a terrible time.
Mm-hmm.
You would test drive multiple cars before you, like, purchase
exactly.
one. So why wouldn't you do the same thing about someone who's, like, working on your spiritual insides?
Yes. Yes. I didn't understand the whole thing of like, oh, when I was doing the yoga teacher training, there was this concept of like, oh, find your teacher. And I was like,
yeah,
whatever.
I found her. She's right in front of me. Hi, Karen.
I got into like lots of different teachers and I'd go when it was convenient for me. And I was just like, what is this? That's super weird. That's boring and kind of culty. I don't like it. Oh, yeah. I didn't like it. It made me really uncomfortable. What do you mean I have to pick one teacher and stick with it? But then, dating, you find someone, and you're like, oh, something about them. Ooh. I really like the way they teach. Mm. I really like the way I feel when I come out of a class with them. It doesn't mean you have to be only exclusive. Going to their classes forever.
You can be open in your yoga practice.
Right. But the nice thing about keeping that consistency is that it actually helps you develop your practice faster.
Fair. I would say that's kind of like with dating.
Yeah.
You keep fucking the same person.
You're investing time in something. You're taking it seriously.
I like it. You have the very like business lady CEO Hillary Clinton way of like explaining something. And I just have like the like layman James Nasty way of like, oh yeah, it's like when you fucking the same person, you got to get closer to them.
Try not just one class, try a bunch. I realize that if you live closer to a city, it's much easier to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot harder to do that if that's not the case. YouTube is an awesome reference where like you can try a ton of different kinds, different styles, different teachers.
And so you've been working a lot recently and been kind of off of your mindfulness practice. Like what has that been like?
Yeah, so...
Especially the nature of the work that you're doing, because you're creating a business that's like, hey, POCs.
So almost a year ago, I left my desk job at a bank that I was at for 9 years to start my own bank with a couple co-founders.
Fucking amazing.
We happened to all be POCs.
Amazing.
And like, we didn't plan it that way. We just really clicked and felt like we all bring this really, really important professional expertise.
Yeah.
And we just happened to be of these different backgrounds. And like any entrepreneur can understand, it's not for the faint of heart. And I had, up until this point, I'd worked for myself so hard on trying to build a balanced lifestyle for whatever that means, so work-life balancing, trying to make sure that I was prioritizing time for myself, even if just a little bit, and prioritizing my yoga practice, whether or not that meant going to a class or doing something at home, or I really enjoy yoga assisting, which is consensual touch in the classroom. And it's a little bit, there's different styles of it. Some of it can be more for correction. The way I learned it and the way I love it is that it has nothing to do with correction. It has to do with grounding and helping the person find their own space in the pose. Mm. And so the hands are always extremely clear and intentional. There's always permission.
Sorry.
What?
I'm like 13 years old.
God.
I know. You're talking about something really important when I just picture me going up. I'm a yoga teacher. And I'm like, I'm going to touch your butt. Doing
that's exactly
down.
Not it.
I
God.
Told you I was gonna do it. As you're doing like upside downward dog, or what's the one where your butt's
downward
in the air?
Downward dog.
Is that the one where your butt's in the air?
Yeah.
Sorry, you're making such a great
no,
point.
No touching
opposite. Butts. But what if your butt needs to be corrected?
No, your butt is perfect, James. Okay. It does not need to be corrected.
I thought if I like said what I was gonna do, and like you were like, that's like consensual. No?
That is a whole other conversation I lead trainings on.
Well, I guess I love like, training about
thing.
It. And also, I guess maybe I've been going to what I thought was a yoga class and it wasn't.
Okay. Yeah, that's a different cost for admission. That's a totally different, that's a different
been
experience.
There. I'm sorry, anyways, but the consensual touch.
Yes. So it's more like grounding. Guiding. Like it might be like a steady hands on your feet as you're like reaching up in a pose. And just like having that extra grounding, that extra weight can feel really good and help you reach. You reach yourself. I'm not pushing you up higher, right. But you're finding that stretch.
So you're like Dina Lohaning. So you can whisper like.
feels really good.
I'm going to Dina Lohan you right now.
It's not for everyone. It's there are many different styles. But how did we get on this?
I don't know. I survived.
I lost my train of thought.
Well, because you're working in your business.
Okay, business. Right. Okay, so the way that I've been spending time in my yoga community.
While we're recording, you're going to go on a tangent because of me.
Yoga classes. I assist a fair amount. And I was starting to pull back on my schedule. And the last piece that I was like really reluctant to pull back on was this assisting piece. Cause like I have a lot of friends that I assist with. There are a lot of friends that go to these classes. Like it's a big part of my support community.
And here's like a spiritual grounding practice.
Totally.
And like your and it's physical as well. Like it became a huge part of your life and
yes.
like your well being.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this was the first time I'd worked so hard to prioritize keeping it in my life. It was the first time that, again, one of those situations, kind of like the travel with my dad. Like no one was telling me that I shouldn't be allocating time to these things, but I just felt this obligation to my company and the time that I needed to spend to prioritize that over these. Somehow I let my brain put this stuff into an like extracurricular category, mm-hmm. not in the like take a shower, brush your teeth.
Yes, this is part
this
of
is
you
what you need
to live
function.
Life.
Yes.
Yeah,
to run in order to run yeah. your company
yeah.
well
yeah.
and to be sharp and steady that I needed these things. And so I, you know, the obviously perfect person that I am did not see that.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, I'm human. Okay, got it.
But
and
it
so,
probably took some time for you to fall on your be like, why
oh my gosh.
Do I feel so crazy?
Oh my gosh.
Because you weren't doing, you didn't have that grounding. You weren't essentially taking your spiritual shower every morning.
Absolutely. Yes. Oh my gosh. Can I write that down?
Yeah. You can.
Write like reminder, take your spiritual shower. Shower.
I've done the same thing sometimes, like when life is going really well, I'm like, I don't need to meditate. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And then, or I'm too busy. I'm too mm-hmm. busy. And then things start getting crazy, and I don't have the foundation to handle any of the stuff that's going off.
Yes.
And once I get back to those, you know, doing the practices, especially when things are going terrible, I'm so glad I have them. And then you're just digging, when things are going well, you're mm-hmm. just digging even deeper into that foundation.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
My little like 2 second like tidbit of like a meditation that I really like is when I'd started meditating intentionally, I found myself doing it more often when I was stressed.
Ooh.
And then I started associating it with stress.
Stress. Yeah.
And,
oh, that's true. Yeah.
And so I've found if I can, this helped change it a lot, or even if it's just 30 seconds when I'm not stressed mm-hmm. and I'm feeling really good.
Yeah. Double down.
I like take a minute, take a breath, close my eyes and take like a mental snapshot of like, what do I feel right now in my chest?
Yeah.
What do I feel right now in my stomach? How do my feet feel
How
on
my
the ground?
Butt feel?
Yeah, honestly, like, I'm probably not clenching it. That's for when.
I like, was. What? Thank you. Ooh,
out
I'm
of excitement.
My butt. Ooh, butt like, unclenched.
Like, what do my shoulders feel?
That has to be the title of the episode. Unclench your butt.
That's the title of my next book.
Butt unclenched. Ooh, that will fly off the shelves.
I mean, so taking that mental snapshot of like, what does this feel like right now? It feels so good, even if it's not amazingly good, even if it's just neutral, because then when I've done that a couple times and I've kind of recorded that in my brain,
mm-hmm.
then when I do have that stressful moment, when I do feel really out of whack, even if I don't understand why, when I take that breath and I do that physical check-in, I can try to remember what did it feel like when things were okay. And it gives me a baseline to just, I don't have to devalue my experience. I don't have to like pretend that everything is okay.
Right.
I don't need to like force it, but just noticing and remembering what that feels like, oh, my shoulders are kind of tense right now. What if I just like drop those just a little bit? What if I unclench just a little bit more?
Breathe in my asshole a little bit.
What if, yeah.
Did you ever take Acting with Danny Shay? The first thing that everybody always remembers, he tells everybody to breathe through their asshole. Did you have that class? No, just me. Got it. Someone posted it on Facebook. They went to go see Danny Shay in a show.
Yeah.
And they were like, I'll never forget you told me to breathe through my asshole. Or in the photo, he was like, we're all breathing through our assholes. And I'm like, I still
it's use a good
that.
One.
When I'm on stage, sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm not breathing in my butt, and like, and you relax.
Yeah, it changes your whole physical posture.
Breathe
changes.
Through your butt. Right now, everybody, take a moment. Start breathing through your butt. I guess it's weird when I whisper it like that. I'll say it more normal. Everybody, just take a breath through the butt.
Do it. Thank you for that. So that's my 2-minute meditation is like, spend time, prioritize time doing that when things are really good. And mm-hmm. then when things feel icky, you have a baseline to come back to.
Yeah.
Michelle and BJ in one episode, double quarantine whammy. It's time for the fact check. My favorite part. So this week, not so much of a fact check, but a gentle push into a direction. So we, Michelle and I, were talking about lesbian bars and where they've gone, and I couldn't remember any of the facts because that's what happens when you do over 200 episodes. You don't always remember all the different tidbits. So I did the deep dive because there was an Ask Minority Corner anything about where are the lesbian bars, and I actually had asked Avi, who's been on this podcast before. So it actually started on July 13th, 2018, in an episode where a listener had asked, where are all the lesbian bars? And we kind of talked about it. I had asked my friend Avi, who's been on the show, their thoughts on it and shared their thoughts. And then the next week on July 18th in the episode, Finding Your Scene and Making It Happen, I do a deep dive into what's currently going on with lesbian bars and the future ahead for queer women bars and establishments and all that good stuff. So there's a bit of a double whammy. We go deep into it on Finding Your Scene and Making It Happen. We were not numbering episodes back then, but it was on July 20th, 2018. And it started the conversation on July 13th, 2018. Ooh, I would like to circle back to the census. So the census day was April 1st, and as you all know, you don't have to complete it on April 1st. You actually have, I think, for the rest of the year to complete the census, so make sure I know. And all the craziness that is happening, do take 5 minutes and do take the census. You can do it online. And I filled it out, and Michelle filled it out, and the Latinx question or moment came up. So there is a space on the very beginning of the census to mention whether or not you are Latinx, but it's not in the race section. So here's what Michelle had to say when she filled it out. She said, I really appreciated how detailed the Latino breakdown was, but it's very confusing how that ties or doesn't tie into the race page because there is still no area for Latinx and no instructions on how to choose correctly in that case. She goes on to say, Latinx distinctions are asked first, and then race is asked second. So it is asked, but it's not part of the Latinx section, which is just, it's weird. But anyways, do fill out the census. We all know how important it is. It allows for allocating of funds to different communities, different cities, for education, for roads, for infrastructure, for hospitals, which we know are so incredibly important and is how we get representation in Congress for our various districts. So we did do a huge talk about that in episode 223. If you want to hear more details of why the census is important and myths about it, just a few episodes ago, we talked about it. And really quickly, I'd like to just, it's been a while since I've dipped into the, since we've read a tweet of the week. This was an, I've been meaning to read this one for a while. This is from at AJST19871. They wrote, I always look forward to Minority Corner every day as I go driving. But man, hearing the duo of at Mitzvitzi and James Arthur M really brought me back. They just vibe together so well. Also, can't help but sing How Many Licks when washing my hands now. Thanks, James. You are very most welcome. It was so great to have Aneke on the pod. All right, that is the show for this week. How are you all doing? I'd love to hear from some of you all. You can email in voice memos to minoritycorner@gmail.com. Would love to hear how you all are doing. What are you listening to? What are you watching? What are you doing to keep yourself sane during all of this craziness? Would love to check and hear how you all are doing. You can also ask Minority Corner anything. You can email us or you can do a voice memo. again, would love to get some of your voices here on the show. So that's it. Be well. Take care of each other. Wash your hands. Stay healthy. Get plenty of rest. Stay away from as many people as you can. And just keep on listening to Minority Corner. We are here for you through quarantine 2020. And thank you all so much for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.